Tom Brown has joined us on Sports Byline. We're talking about his very interesting book. Tom, what did you do for him professionally? Tell me about the early days of the deals that you put together and how you saw your job with Ken Griffey Jr. evolve.
Well, the earliest of the early days were strictly car deals, automobiles that he had purchased from my dealership. And it's kind of interesting is because even those deals weren't strictly business. You know, he even after his first car for me, which I believe was a black Testarossa, a Ferrari 512 TR, he just wanted me to go out with him and have fun, and that's really how our relationship grew. It was just somebody who, you know, I was 9 years his senior. And I think he looked at me as somebody who could, you know what, in all honesty, he looked at me, I'm not going to say as a second father, but, you know, certainly something pretty close to that. It was almost scary in a way, the amount of attention that he would give me as far as, you know, Tom, what should I do here? Tom, what should I do there? And that put a little pressure on me as far as, gosh, you know, I better make sure that I'm up on, you know, what needs to be done or shouldn't be done. And I think you're talking about the early things. There almost wasn't any early things. I mean, it was pretty much a feet-first jump into about the closest relationship I've ever had with anybody.
And what about his marriage? When did he get married in his career? At what point?
Well, let me, gosh, I'm going to say he was, I don't remember the age, Melissa and him, which, I mean, I was asked to put together part of their wedding. It was at Northwest College in Kirkland, Washington. And I'm going to say, you know, I believe Kenny was 22, 23, because I was 32. So, yeah, he must have been about 22 or 23 years old.
At what point did he start cheating on her?
Well, that was before the marriage ever started. That was, oh my gosh, you're talking about real head spinning stuff there. Those were times when, actually, the first time that I understood what I was in for, I flew down to Tempe, Arizona with my wife and my son. And before I got out of my rented Cadillac and I was walking up to our condominium that we had rented right next to Junior's. And I was grabbed by Junior and Craig, his brother. They threw me in the back of his silver Audi and took me off to Hooters. And at which point I was sitting there, and you know, I'm a guy. I'm looking around, of course. But, you know, this lady comes up and kind of looks at the bottom of his drink doily or whatever they're called, and there was her phone number. And I observed at that point kind of what was going on. But I do want to jump ahead a little bit here because there's something very important I want to tell you exactly how it happened. When we left Arizona, we were driving home, and I had a new Suburban with the old type of phone where, you know, you put it on speakerphone and you would just talk right out loud. Well, Ken called, and Melissa was in the back. My wife was there with my son, and Ken says, Melissa, says the team doctor gave me a Benadryl, and he said that, listen, he says, you know, don't call me tonight because I'm going to go to sleep. And I looked at Melissa. We all knew what that meant. And she was just crushed, you know. I mean, that was code for, look, I'm going out. I'm going to do what I do. And, you know, I took Melissa back to her home in Issaquah and asked if she wanted me to stay, you know, wanted to have me stay with her or my wife, Lori, stay with her. And she just said no. That really, forgive me, pissed me off. That was the beginning of, you know, I kind of jumped into the arena there as far as really taking care of these affairs. And you know what? Again, how many of these girls who would call up and request money, I can't tell you how many really were with Ken, but I mean, I know several that actually were. And I had to make those payouts out of my own pocket. And there's a document on the webpage that your audience can go to, KenGriffeyJrAndMe.com. They can see one of those documents where he paid me off measly $80,000 for personal services rendered. Well, that was for those fees that I paid out for, whether it be, I must have paid out several hundred thousand dollars.
You know, I'm interested in something. Tom, you make so much sense, and you seem down to earth. You seem to be well-focused. I'm just wondering, I can understand maybe one time being asked to clean up a mess, but when it became a habit of some type, where did you lose your direction?
I lost my direction when the worst thing that ever happened to me was what I thought was the best thing that ever happened to me. And October 8th of 1992, I signed a contract, which again is on that webpage. And your audience can see what that contract is and just how valuable it was. 3 5-year renewable terms with Ken Griffey Jr., signed by the entire family and myself. I pretty much, I'm not going to say I lost my compass. I'm going to say I was caught up in a wildfire that I've never dreamed possible at that point. I've never had happen since. That contract, again, was so valuable monetarily that I had to do everything I could to protect that contract and Ken at the same time, because that was my future. It was worth millions of dollars. I was offered $2 million the day that I signed it and wouldn't even consider it. So it was out of protection not only for Ken but for myself, the things that happened.
And what about the entourage around him as he became more and more famous? Can you give me the players in this whole situation?
Well, I'll name names here. There was Lester, there was Corky, there was Jazz, there was Chill. Yes, I know these sound like fun names to you, but these were the characters that were there, and those were just some of them. That Melissa called me one day from the home in Issaquah and said, "You know, Tom," and the bottom line was there were swear words and everything else, and she says, "These guys are destroying our marriage. They won't leave. They're eating our food. Ken is giving us money. Can you help me?" And I'm thinking, okay, well, what am I going to do? Obviously, it's in the book. What I did was I gave them all jobs, cars, health insurance, and there was absolutely nothing for them to do for me, but this is something that I did for the family to get them out of that house. Now, in respect to Ken called me the very same day and said, "Tom, if you really don't have jobs for him, you know, don't give them. Don't put yourself out." But I mean, I didn't have a choice. I had to do that to keep Ken and Melissa together. It was the only way that it was going to work.
When you take a look at him and how he developed, not only as an athlete but also as a person and a man as well, what is it that you either admire or you dislike about the way he developed, Tom?
I can tell you one thing, along with your audience, and that is that, you know, what I admire about Ken is that he never did drugs, performance enhancing or any other type. The amount of alcohol that he consumed was well within the reason of any normal person who didn't have a problem with any type of alcohol or anything like that. What I disliked about him toward the end was his best friend at the time, and at least I felt that way, and he showed me that that was me. And when he knew that myself, and again, you got to remember, he would call my wife Lori and call her beautiful, and he was to be the godfather of my Melissa, both were going to be godparents of my daughter Erica, and he was very close to my son Jonathan. Towards the end, when I was swimming in just millions of dollars of debt, and he knew how much I'd put out for him, that when he turned his back on me, it was the most incredible feeling of just, I have no idea. It's the worst thing I've ever felt in my life.
You're probably looking for the word betrayal.
I believe I am, yes.
Yeah. When you look at the way things did turn out, could it have turned out any other way, knowing his personality?
The only reason that it couldn't have turned out any other way, as it is in the book, there are so many large parties from Bank of America, which then was Seafirst Bank, down to Brian Goldberg in Cincinnati, Planet Hollywood, all these large corporations that were courting Ken. And I simply was just Tom Brown, an auto dealer in Seattle. It could not have turned out any other way. He sided with what I consider to be the enemy. But see, he didn't just betray me, Ron. He threw myself, he threw my wife, Lori, he threw my son, Jonathan, he threw my daughter, Erica, and everything we were about right into the fire. And he never once said he was sorry.
Tom Brown is with us. We're talking about his book, and we'll continue in the next segment. We're going to talk about how this all came down at the very end, and also some of the things that he had to do. He gave up an awful lot, including his business, his marriage as well, and he tottered on bankruptcy. It's a fascinating book, and I hope you'll check it out, because it's called Low and in the Dirt, Ken Griffey Jr. and Me, A True Story of Extortion, Corruption, and the Destruction of a Life. And, of course, Ken Griffey Jr., playing up in Seattle, where he started his career, certainly an outstanding player, a future Hall of Famer. There's no doubt about that as well. But there's another side to him, and we'll continue talking about it. It's something that's outlined in this book by Tom Brown. We continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on America's sports talk show, Sports Byline.